DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet. From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet. I'm Sonja Dean. On today's show, we invite you to a festive feast from around the world. For starters, wine from Italy, followed up with a vegan main course from Germany, and insects for dessert.
They would say that these things, we only picked them when we were little, because you would run around the farm, run around the gardens, and pick one cricket or two crickets. You roast them on a naked fire out there in the garden and eat.
Plus, a sustainable cup of coffee in Costa Rica. All that's coming up in the next half hour on Living Planet. Let's start with a little drink. With the Lucifer heat wave causing record temperatures in Italy last summer, wine connoisseurs weren't complaining. The lack of rainfall and blazing sun made 2017 an exceptional year in terms of wine quality. But the quantity of grape production went down, and not just due to drought. As Megan Williams reported from Tuscany, wine growers, big and small, are increasingly facing another ravenous challenge.
A church bell tolls at noon on a hot summer's day in the Tuscan countryside. Silvery rows of olive trees cover the hills, and leafy vineyards too, like the one farmer and local winemaker Gennaro Nesti is tending.
Scendono da qua. This is the path that the wild boars descend from the forest into the vineyard. Anche qua.
Nesti leads me to one, two, three different paths the boars have trampled through the forest to reach the succulent grapes. Standing next to his small vineyard, he shows me what the wild boar ate. He says in past years, the grapes would grow so low on the vine, they'd almost touch the ground.
This year, the grapes start to grow up here. Last year, they grew much lower, but the boars ate them all.
But because of an invasion of wild boars, which have devoured the grapes and tender vines, he's pruned them about 5 feet high on the vine, a move that has drastically reduced his harvest. Italy's Farmers Association Coldiretti says in the past decade, the number of boars has doubled to about 1 million. One theory is that a species of boars from ex-Yugoslavia that has more babies per litter is causing the explosion. Tuscany's wine growers group says this year the boars will cost them about 20 million euros in damages. Many wine producers have resorted to putting up fences or electrical wires, but smaller producers can't afford that. Nesti's neighbor, Gemma Zavolta, says the wild boars are a problem for her, too.
Last year, we harvested nothing, zero. In the years before, only 20% of the usual. The boars stripped the vines clean of grapes.
But that's not her only concern.
Last summer, a mother wild boar, training a dozen or so young ones, came right up here, just a few meters from where we're eating.
She now eats indoors. The boars have killed people and caused car crashes, even in cities like Rome, where they're sighted more and more. Last year, Italy passed a law to reduce the boar and deer population by extending the hunting season, though limiting the age and gender of animals targeted. It was met with fierce opposition from environmentalists, who argue that the boars should be sterilized rather than shot, and their population controlled by increasing the number of natural predators, like wolves. Surprisingly, hunters such as Federico Piccioli, who runs a small veterinarian clinic in the valley below, agree with the environmentalists that the law does little to solve the problem.
Gli animali sono urbanizzati in un mondo che si è antropizzato.
The animals are being urbanized in a world that's being taken over by people. If you're going to put up fences everywhere, the animals are going to look for new places to live.
He says the only way to keep the boars away from vineyards is to stop illegal building around forests and to allow the culling of old trees, something he says Italy is not doing.
Cioè non è normale che un cinghiale vada a far danni nel giardino di una casa.
It's not normal that a wild boar invades the places where people live. If they do, they're doing so for a reason.
When you don't cull older trees in the forest, nothing grows on the ground for the boars to eat. They're only trying to survive, he says. Piccioli adds that with the ongoing drought, that quest for survival and incursions into Tuscany's vineyards will only intensify. Megan Williams, DW Radio, Tuscany, Italy.
The holiday season is often a time of indulgence. And if you've had enough rich, festive food, why not take up our vegan challenge? Over the past year, some of our DW reporters were looking at ways to become a bit greener. For our series that ran under the hashtag HowGreenAmI, Louise Osborne in Berlin tried out being vegan for a week with mixed results.
It's 8 a.m. on a cold winter morning in the German capital. Cars rumble past on the cobble streets of Neukölln, my home district in Berlin. Normally, with minus 2 degrees, I'd be kitted out in my thick leather boots and a wool-lined warm coat. But this week, I'm giving up using anything produced from animals. I'm already 2 days into my How Green Am I challenge, and I've replaced my animal-sourced winter woolies with canvas Converse sneakers and acrylic leg warmers and scarf. But I'm already concerned. My experiment is all about seeing how environmentally friendly being vegan really is, and I can't believe that all these synthetic fibres can really be doing much good.
Alexandra Bergeron?
I've decided to call Alexandra Perschau, a campaigner for detoxing fashion at Greenpeace Germany, to find out more.
Can you hear me properly?
She specializes in fabrics and their impact on the environment. I want to ask Alexandra which fabrics are better for the environment, synthetic or natural. And I have a feeling the answer could be complicated.
Yeah, so looking into the synthetic fibers, there is on one point is that they are based on oil, so we are using non-renewable resources. We use a lot of energy to produce them and throw them away far too fast. Yeah, of course, from environmental point of view, you also have problems connected to be it cotton and pesticides and water use, be it in wool production. It's animal welfare and how we treat the animals, but also how much land do we use for grazing.
So it's really not simple.
No, the further you dive into the issue, the more complicated it gets. First make the assessment if you really need new items, and if not, then don't buy it, because we don't take any natural resources, we don't exploit people in the textile supply chain, so the less we consume, the smaller the footprint.
So whether vegan or not, there are a lot of problems with the way we produce our clothes. But what about giving up meat, eggs and dairy products?
Um was trinken wir?
Oder ein Burger.
Eine Flasche Wein?
Nein. Soll ich einen Burger bestellen und machen halb von
Weißwein? Weißwein?
Sollen wir eine Flasche Wein nehmen?
Ja, Weißwein.
It's midway through my 1 week vegan experiment and I've come with some friends to a restaurant in the center of Berlin. But I made a big mistake. I didn't tell them about my challenge. We shed our winter coats and sit down. The light is dim and the air smells of delicious, succulent meat. I take a look at the menu. We've come to a fondue and grill restaurant. That translates to a menu of almost exclusively cheese and meat dishes. I confess to my friends, and they are extremely supportive.
There's basically nothing that I can choose on the menu.
So just have some nice fondue, no one will find out anyways. No, seriously! I mean, who will find out if you do that tonight?
You can always take the side dishes.
I look ruefully over the menu and pick out a pumpkin soup. Careful to ask for it without the cream that usually goes on top, and I take a portion of fries cooked in sunflower oil, I hope, and not animal fat. In front of me is a large bowl of soft brown bread cut into nibble-sized chunks. One of my friends reaches across me to stick her fondue into the bowl before taking a small piece of bread and dipping it into the bowl of melted fondue cheese. As my friends laugh and joke, fighting over the bread and cheese, I sit back and dig into my single meal. I have to admit, I'm feeling a little left out, and I don't even like cheese. Still, abstaining from meat is definitely one thing that I can feel good about. As well as supposedly being better for our health, eating less meat also means less greenhouse emissions. The livestock sector is responsible for almost 15% of human-induced greenhouse gases, according to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. Animal feed, transportation of animal products, and encroachment into forests for pasture and cropland all take their toll and contribute to climate change. And not forgetting the gases that come from the animals themselves. But still, I'm desperate for a burger and a bit of milk chocolate. I need some motivation, and to hear from some people who have made veganism their lifestyle. Here in Berlin, veganism is becoming ever more popular, and I've come to a vegan market to see what all the fuss is about. As people mill about checking out the soy milk, hot chocolate, and animal blubber-free makeup, I catch up with Monique, a stallholder selling vegan lip balm.
Why I became a vegan was because I was a really naggy meat eater. Like, I would eat it, and I would love the taste, and I would think, oh no, but those poor animals. And that went on for years and years and years, and at one point in Australia, I thought, okay, either stop nagging or just stop eating all this stuff. So I chose the latter.
I'm torn. I'm concerned about animal welfare, but I don't oppose animals being killed for food. And I worry that I don't have the willpower to keep up with such a strict regime. But maybe it doesn't have to be like that. Here's Monique again.
What I don't like about veganism or the vegan scene is if people tell you how you should live vegan. Because I make my own rules as well. I still have leather bags from before I was vegan. Leather jacket, I still use that because I loved it then. I'm not going to throw it away. And also, why should anything have rules that is coming from a pure heart and from I want to make an effort, I want to contribute as well.
It's been a tough week. Cutting down on meat is definitely doable, but making sure I don't eat or wear anything made from animal products, that's just not so easy. I now realise that I'm not as green as I thought I was. Although I might still have the odd burger here and there, I'll definitely be cutting down on the animal products I consume, and so my carbon footprint too. And who knows, perhaps in the future, I'll even try veganism again. Louise Osborne, DW, Berlin, Germany.
This is Sonia Dean. You're listening to DW's Living Planet, to our holiday special on foods from around the world. Coming up, coffee in Costa Rica. But first, we visit Kenya to try biscuits made of bugs. Soma, 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 kijana, masiku zazidi badilika, kijana. Flying ants are considered a delicacy in the East African country. They're sometimes even eaten live, direct from the tree. But many other insects can also be made into food. In fact, protein from insects has a much smaller carbon footprint than red meat or even poultry. In Western Kenya, a professor is researching how to blend these insects into delicious dishes like biscuits and sausages. Linda Stauda went to the Kisumu region to find out more, and her report is presented by Sarah Steffen.
Eunice Omolo grabs a large gray plastic box from a pile of boxes. Gently, she takes off the lid. Inside, the box is lined with egg cartons that neatly divide the box into small chambers. In each of these separate chambers are crickets, lots of them. One box could contain up to 1,500 crickets, even as many as 2,000. In her kitchen, Omolo easily has 60 of these boxes, all neatly stacked on top of each other. Why does she have that many bugs in her house? Omolo breeds crickets and then sells them.
I started it as a hobby, and now it is becoming a business. For consumption, somebody, I think I'm doing consumption.
Insects, crickets, grasshoppers, termites are everywhere in Western Kenya, and these critters often end up on dinner plates. But until recently, catching insects was seen as child's play rather than serious business.
They would say that these things, we only picked them when we were little, because you would run around the farm, run around the gardens and pick one cricket or two crickets. You roast them on a naked fire out there in the garden and eat.
That's Monica Ayeko, a university professor in Bondo near Lake Victoria.
I started working on insects when I realized that there are a lot of people, particularly children, who are extremely undernourished. And they are malnourished because they don't have adequate food. And yet we have a lot of insects in the lake region.
Catching crickets in the wild is a tedious process. It takes a long time and isn't very efficient. With her research, Ayeko has come up with the best methods for raising crickets and has taught her techniques to breeders. Grace Achieng is one of them.
It's not hard work. We feed them with cabbage, flour, and a mixture of other fodder. In nature, insects live on greens, so we give them that here as well.
Greens.
Eating insects was still considered normal for her grandparents, but today's young people remain skeptical. Judith Thauma was one of the brave ones who actually ate a cricket to see what it tastes like.
I once tried a fried insect and it was good. My mother prepared them and I took only one. I removed the head and took a tiny bite and then quickly ate the whole thing because it was delicious.
Monica Ayeko says it's much easier to grind grilled crickets into a fine powder and use that as flour for cooking.
The idea now, how to bring in a processed food such that it doesn't look like a bug cricket that's going to bite somebody. That's when I started working on biscuits, because I know biscuits are a favorite of children.
Cakes, biscuits, and porridge made with insects are now available in local supermarkets, made by a company that buys the bugs from the breeders. But the extra income isn't the most important part, says Silpa Ayango.
With regular food, my son was incredibly thin. But then I gave him crickets and I saw a huge difference. His body changed and he looked healthy.
The insects are packed with essential amino acids, vitamins and minerals such as iron and zinc. And, says Monica Ayeko, they're free from chemicals. And most importantly, they're cheap.
This is a protein for future, because we are getting into a stage where we cannot farm sheep, cattle, goats and all that. We need these small animals that can give us very rich nutrients.
Sarah Steffen with that report by Linda Staude. And what better way to wash those crickets down than with a good old cup of joe? In Costa Rica, coffee production contributes to 9% of the country's greenhouse gas emissions. Fertilizers are the worst emissions culprit. But now, farmers are learning more eco-friendly techniques with help from Germany's GIZ Development Agency. Transforming the coffee sector, they hope, will help Costa Rica reach its goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2021. Neil King presents this report by Katya Duna.
Leaning over a row of four cups of steaming coffee, a lab technician breathes in the fragrant aroma of a fresh brew before spooning out a sample and swishing it across his taste buds. Satisfied, he spits it out into a travel mug before reaching for the next cup. In this stark, brightly lit lab at the Costa Rica Coffee Institute, or eCafe, scientists subject the country's famed export to extensive quality control testing. They're also working to further improve the coffee and make it more climate-friendly. Farmers send samples of ailing plants to the institute, where scientists look for efficient treatments, such as more ecologically sound fertilizers. On nearby test fields, new types of plants are developed and grown in long rows. Emilia Acosta, a young woman who works with Germany's GIZ Development Agency, points out a promising new plant from Brazil with an unusually large number of small, tightly packed green beans.
Esto son plantaciones de tres años. Esto es toda la cosecha que tiene.
These are the three-year-old plants. This is the entire harvest. This isn't normal for one of our traditional plants. Usually they need longer to produce so many coffee beans. And the leaves are bigger, nearly double the size of traditional leaves. And they're very tough. That helps deter fungus infections from developing quickly.
Acosta's job is to introduce farmers to the improved ecological practices.
Besides using these plants, they also need to change how they cultivate them. They have to increase the distance between the plants, change the fertilizer, and provide more shade. Those are big changes. Most start with small steps. The project is quite innovative. No one else is doing it yet. We hope that the production methods will allow coffee farmers to market their product as something unique, unlike any other coffee in the world.
Acosta regularly travels to coffee plantations, visiting with farmers and leading workshops teaching new climate-friendly production methods. Today, she's meeting a group of local coffee growers at a smaller plantation in Orosi, in central Costa Rica. Coffee farmer Cecilia Genes understands the need for these new methods. She explains that this year the harvest was already well underway during the rainy season, 3 months early.
We're well aware of climate change. We didn't used to start harvesting until September. This year, it was June. That's incredible.
As a young farmer straps on a fertilizer spreader, a backpack with a blue and orange canister attached to a hose, Acosta says if they learn to spray more efficiently, they will produce less damaging greenhouse gases. Most emissions come from fertilizer, especially nitrogen fertilizer. Today, they're practicing with water to learn proper dosages and how to cover a hectare of coffee plants most efficiently.
Café, café.
Later on, the farmers gather in the shade of a large tree along the edge of the coffee field. An instructor explains how they can keep CO2 emissions low by planting large shade trees around their crops.
50% del tronco, más o menos, es puro carbono.
This trunk contains about 50% carbon, and the tree is constantly growing through the process of photosynthesis. That means it absorbs carbon from the atmosphere through its leaves in the form of CO2. As it grows year after year, it absorbs more and more carbon. Some trees absorb more than others. The ones with dense wood are best.
Acosta says the farmers are sometimes hesitant to try the new techniques, but are ready to learn.
The coffee farmers are always curious and want to know more and more. Sometimes they're skeptical of new methods, but they're willing to try. They say, maybe in that small corner over there, I'll try it and see if it works. And so, step by step, they're learning by doing. And then they go to a neighbor and say, look what I've done. I didn't think it would work, but it's super.
Mira, hice esto y pensé que no iba a funcionar, pero está funcionando súper bien, entonces qué chiva.
Oscar Chacon has been an organic coffee farmer for many years. On a walk through his dense coffee field, he shows off the lush, dark green plants with a big smile.
You feel proud when your plants look like this. When a coffee producer sees such plants, he's happy.
Se siente feliz.
He bends over and scoops up a handful of dark, rich soil. Because of the many shade trees and weeds, the ground has become more fertile.
Estos son hongos, son microorganismos.
These are fungi and microorganisms, organic materials that break down and decay. It comes from leaves that fall from the trees. They contain calcium, magnesium, and other materials. That means the land nourishes itself with the organic material.
Con la materia orgánica que él aporta.
Chacon has been using environmentally friendly practices for years now. It's hoped that within 2 years, an additional 6,000 coffee farmers will join him. That would bring Costa Rica one step closer to its goal of being carbon neutral by 2021.
Neil King had that report by Katya Duna. And that wraps up our festive special with foods from around the world. Our program today was produced with the help of Ileana Gilarducci, Jonas Immiger, Abby Young-Powell, and Natalie Muller. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes and SoundCloud. If you have feedback for the radio show, email us, livingplanet@dw.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. And visit our website for more important stories, dw.com/environment. I'm Sonia Dean. This was DW's Living Planet. Happy holidays. Till next time.
that.